I am a capitalist and I believe in a free market, but right now I'm about to sit down with a radical left-wing socialist that believes it is unethical to be a billionaire.
The idea was that all wealth would trickle down, and it does not trickle down, it just stays up. And that is effectively where capitalism has failed.
People get paid what they're worth. If I was underpaying somebody and they're bringing money into the company, why would I underpay them? Because they're just going to leave.
Who would agree with this? Do people genuinely hold that position?
If you know that if you worked really hard and got an A star, it would be split amongst hundreds of students and actually everyone's going to get the same, you know that it would demotivate people and the average score would go down. We're going to have it out in person with the big debate. You're not anti-capitalism. You're anti-greedy, selfish, exploitative practices.
Billionaires multiplied their wealth. It wasn't because their product was good. It was because they took advantage of a global crisis.
I believe in fair, compassionate capitalism. What do you think the solution is? Thanks for coming to debate. Did you want to give a tiny introduction to yourself and your background?
Sure. My name's Afroz Zaidi. I'm a journalist, a freelance writer. I've written for and edited for various sort of left-wing online platforms.
Oh, awesome. Yeah. So the first thing that we were going to debate, whether you should be able to vote if you don't own property. So what are your thoughts on that?
I find this question really funny because my first thought was, who would agree with this? Like, do people genuinely hold that position?
Because, I mean, everybody held that position until recent past.
Sure, but we're not in that point in time anymore, you know? So I think that at the moment, voting is meant to be kind of a democratic process. It's meant to be a kind of, means of having, you know, democratic accountability, people being represented in parliament, people being represented kind of, you know, and that's people sort of from all areas of society. So the idea of only landlords being able, I mean, it may have happened in the past, but for it to happen today is kind of, the idea is sort of bizarre to me.
Yeah, I guess the thought process behind it would be, why should you be able to vote if you're not invested in the country?
In order to invest, you need to have capital to invest. So what do we, if you're only restricting voting to people who are investing in the country, you are, you know, by definition, disenfranchising a whole kind of bunch of people, probably the majority of people, who don't have that capital to invest, mm-hmm. you know, who haven't been fortunate enough to be able to own property.
But let me ask you a question. Do you think that if you're working in a company, but you're not a shareholder or not an owner of the company, you should be able to decide company policies, big decisions, what that company invests in, how that company operates, if you don't have shares in the company?
Yes, I do.
You do?
I do, yeah.
So you think that the man that works at Starbucks should be able to choose where Starbucks invests their profits, how Starbucks operate?
Yeah, because most of the time, people at the kind of the service level or sort of at the bottom rung of an organization get paid the worst. So if they're not getting paid what really they should be, like a lot of people these days are not even, you know, we've all been through kind of the whole discussion around the cost of living crisis. People aren't earning enough to be able to meet their living costs. So if they're not even earning enough to meet their living costs, they should at least be able to have a say in the company.
Wow. I mean, in the same way that you said, who would think that? Who would say that? That's to me, that's crazy, because if you let staff have a say in where you invest your profits and where, I mean, you can listen to their opinion, but to let them run the ship when they're not invested, why should they? If they've not put money into the company, why should they choose where the company goes and how it makes it? It doesn't seem fair at all.
I think the difference probably in perspective comes from the fact that the investment is of various forms. And unfortunately, money is the only form that is kind of, in a capitalist society, it's the only form that is recognized. But workers invest their time, they invest their labor. And that is actually the only form of capital that they have. They don't have money. So they invest what they have into the company. So they are investing, they just are not investing money because they don't have money. You know,
so what would you describe yourself as? Are you a socialist or a communist? Or
I'm an anti-capitalist. I don't like capitalism. because I believe that it is, it has caused a lot of the decline that we find ourselves in today, globally. Beyond that, I'm not really, I think that practically in society, there's not really much point in being kind of actively like a communist or a socialist or anything like that, because society is not structured in a way that facilitates these political positions, you know. Yeah. So I don't really see the point in identifying as a socialist or a communist, because just feel like, where do I go from there, you know? But I do know that I dislike capitalism.
So if you say you're anti-capitalism, do you think that what I do, I know you know a little bit about how I work, so I've got a property development company where I buy buildings, turn them into apartments, build houses, and I make profit from that. Are you anti that?
You know, I'm not anti-individuals. You know, I'm not anti-individual businessmen. I'm not against the idea of a person beginning a business, which effectively is what you do, and running it in a way to try and kind of, you know, make profit, because essentially your profit in a business is your earning. It's your salary. Effectively, it's what you, it's what you take home at the end of the day, right? So I'm not against people trying to make money. We need to make money in order to survive. What I'm against is the exploitation of people who are less fortunate, who are from less fortunate circumstances, that capitalism inherently promotes. So I don't believe, you know, I'm not against people kind of making money. Like I said, people need money to survive. Yeah. But I think it's more, you know, how you make it. Are your practices ethical? Are you paying people fairly? Are you making sure that the money, the wealth that you have, is not being used to put people who are, you know, structurally disadvantaged, through no fault of their own, that you are not using your power and your wealth to exploit those people and to further disadvantage them. That is what I'm against.
So you, I would probably say then that you're not anti-capitalism, you're anti-greedy, selfish, exploitative practices within capitalism?
I believe that capitalism is inherently linked to greedy, selfish, exploitative practices. I believe that the kind of the natural conclusion of capitalism is because it's profit driven, and it's the pursuit of profit above and over everything else, you know, at the expense of everything else, including human rights, including kind of, you know, labor rights, certainly. It just including kind of the state of the planet, for instance. And I think that the world that we're living in, we are seeing kind of a very direct impact of that.
I mean, could you not argue, the way I see it, is that money is a certificate of gratitude? So if I offer a good service to somebody, if I can provide value, then in exchange, they'll pay me money. So if I want to make a lot of money, the way to make a lot of money is not to be unethical and greedy. And it, actually, if you're unethical and greedy and short-sighted, you're going to end up with a bad reputation, probably not much customers, disgruntled staff, high turnover. If you've got a really good product and a really good service and you're providing value, that's how you get money. That's how you get rich. So to promote capitalism and a free market is a good thing. Of course, there can be people that are greedy and bad with it. But in essence, is that not what money is? Is it not a medium for exchange?
So a couple of things. I mean, in an ideal world, yes. What you said about people kind of, if you have bad ethical practices, if you have, you know, if you are not creating a good enough product, then you won't be successful, it'll affect your reputation. That works to a certain extent. But beyond that, for instance, we know that in the pandemic, the top sort of 1%, or I'm not sure, like, you know, billionaires basically sort of multiplied their wealth because of, it wasn't because their product was good. It was because they took advantage of a global crisis.
I don't agree, though. I think it was because, say, for example, Amazon.
It's fact. This is what happened. Billionaires, like, literally multiplied their wealth.
So give me an example of somebody.
So this is like related to, for instance, the PPE scandal, all of the things around kind of supply, you know, medical supplies and things like that. Government contracts were given to, you know, deliberately given to companies, you know, in a practice that's now sort of called chemocracy or, you know, so it was, there weren't transparent processes of tendering for contracts, for instance, and they were just handed to people who were friends of people in government or related to people in government, you know? And these people, I mean, this is just, you know, one sort of specific example off the top of my head, but these people kind of multiplied their wealth manyfold during the pandemic. And in certain, some cases, for instance, with the PPE scandal, where a load of PPE that was given to hospitals was unusable, it was expired. So it wasn't even an exchange, you know, they didn't get rich because they had a good product. They just got rich because they exploited a global crisis.
And because they were in with the government.
Yeah. So this actually happened, you know, so, so that's one thing. The other thing is that the idea of, giving somebody money in exchange for, you know, as a form of gratitude. I agree with that. The issue is that that gratitude is not, that level of gratitude is not what it should be. We have normalized this idea of kind of certain forms of labor being extremely, extremely devalued. And this is why many people who are, you know, in service jobs, who are in kind of these, you know, for instance, 0 hours contracts, people who are, you know, doing these lowest paid jobs are unable to make ends meet, because even though they are providing essential services, they are providing essential labor, it is devalued to such an extent that they don't get enough gratitude. So I feel like that definition of gratitude is what needs to change. It needs to take into account the real value of what these people are contributing to society and to the economy.
I don't totally disagree with you. However, I think generally speaking, there's always exceptions. I mean, there's the odd company that might be in with the government and there might be unethical and got rich off the back of the pandemic, which is not good. But generally speaking, businesses that are successful, it's because they provide value. I also think, generally speaking, people get paid what they're worth. So I've got about 50 employees. If I was underpaying somebody and they could easily get paid more from another company and they're worth more and they're bringing money into the company, why would I underpay them? Because they're just going to leave. It doesn't make sense.
I think that's because you are, you know, running your business in a way that takes that into account. You know, you are running your business in a way that values your employees, so you don't want to underpay them. Unfortunately, everybody else doesn't do that. Not all business owners are like you. They're not, you know, recognizing the value that their employees bring to the company, and they're quite happy to underpay. I think also there's the fact that currently the employment market is, you know, I don't know if you've sort of been keeping track of this, but it's very, very difficult out there. You know, I've been looking for work. I haven't been able to find work. And I think anybody who's out there looking for a job will probably agree at this point.
It's tough.
It's not the kind of thing that you can just, if you have a job currently, you can just leave it and find something better, you know, unfortunately. And I think that employers exploit that. They take advantage of the fact that, well, you know, there aren't jobs out there. It's a terrible job market. So even if I, you know, have terrible work conditions, if I pay this person a terrible pay, they have nowhere else to go. I think they take advantage of that.
Yeah. Yeah. But possibly they do. What do you think the solution is then? Because I think the solution is, I believe in capitalism. I describe myself as a compassionate capitalist, which is to run your business based off of value, treat people with respect, pay people what they're worth, look after your customers. Make sure that when somebody buys your product, that you're given a fair exchange. Trade ethically. So I believe in fair, compassionate capitalism. What do you think the answer is? We're in tough times, tough economical times. There's a lot of people struggling. What do you think the solution is?
I think the solution is a fair, compassionate society. I think the issue with capitalism is that it views everybody as a potential worker. And so your value is tied to how much you can contribute to the economy, how much you can contribute to the labor market. And not everybody is able to contribute for various reasons. You know, some people are disabled, some people are chronically ill, some people are, you know, carers, full-time carers for children or for, you know, other people who are vulnerable. So not everybody is in a position to contribute to the economy or to the labor market. And I don't believe that that means they are then inherently less worthy of having a better quality of life. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't think that that makes them less worthy of having a decent place to live and having their needs met and being able to, you know, feed themselves adequately.
Yeah.
A lot of people are struggling with that right now. And
who pays then? Who pays for their living expenses?
So I think that, you know, maybe socialism is kind of one reason, you know, socialism as an ideology is sort of one alternative because of the fact that it takes into account people who can't contribute in that way, who can't contribute their labor, right? So effectively, people who are, you know, the idea is that you share the resources. So people who are incredibly well off, who have more than they need, they should be taxed. Right. So that it covers social services. It covers things like social housing for those who need it. It covers healthcare, et cetera.
Yeah. And I think it's a lovely idea. My argument would be, in reality, it doesn't work. I mean, you went to university, right? What did you get? In terms of your grade, did you do well?
So I actually didn't do my bachelor's in this country, but I did my master's here. The only reason that I was able to afford that is because I was working at the university where I did the master's. So I qualified for staff fees, which, you know, was very little. And that's the only reason that I was able to do it. Otherwise, I would not have been able to afford to do a master's.
Well, good for you for getting through. But let's say you're at university.
Yeah.
And what they do is they say everyone that studies, they're going to work out what grade everybody got, and then they're going to divide it. So if you're at school, and you say, okay, you got an A star, but you got an E. But don't worry, we're going to share our results and we're going to work out and everyone's going to be given the same grade.
I mean, grading on a curve is actually a practice that happens, but also that is a completely, you know, the way that the education system is structured is a completely whole other debate, honestly.
But it's not.
And I also think that it's like comparing apples and oranges.
It's really not.
A university grade is not, if you get a lower university grade, you are not going to die. But if you get if you do not have adequate housing, you will, you know, you may die.
But isn't it unfair on the people?
You may freeze out on the streets because you have nowhere to sleep.
Isn't it unfair on the people that might have learned difficulties to go get an A? And there's other people that naturally are more academic and gifted and they're getting an A star. Wouldn't it be fair?
Firstly, people who have learning difficulties, there are, you know, now I believe that there are rules in place to make reasonable adjustments for them. So for instance, if somebody is dyslexic, they get more time on a timed exam. This is one example. So there are provisions that are already being made, even in that context. But again, like I said, the way that the education system is structured, I disagree with that as well. And I believe that it does disadvantage. It advantages certain kinds of learners, certain kinds of people, and it disadvantages certain kinds of people. And it's the same with kind of the way that society is structured. And I still believe that these are fundamentally different things. I believe that you can't compare a university grade to somebody's basic living needs. But I think that fundamentally, there are provisions already being made for people who have learning difficulties. Yeah. And in the same way, there should be provisions made, much more than there currently are in British society today, for people who are disadvantaged, socially.
But giving somebody extra time because they're dyslexic is a little bit like giving someone housing benefits, giving someone a bit of support and a bit of help. The reality is, if you know that if you worked really hard and got an A star, it'll be split amongst hundreds of students and actually everyone's going to get the same. What it would do, well, you tell me, do you think that that's going to motivate people to study hard and try and get a good grade for the sake of everybody? Or do you think that actually people would say, what's the point of even trying? And the standard would become much lower and everybody would end up with a worse score.
I think this is such an inaccurate analogy. It's just not appropriate at all.
I'll tell you what, it's the exact same.
It's not appropriate at all. I mean, housing costs and kind of, you know, feeding yourself and being able to warm your home. All of these things are not comparable to how well somebody does in university or in any kind of educational context.
The reality
is, it's just not an appropriate analogy. I mean, find a better analogy and then maybe I can tell you if I agree or disagree.
The reality is, you know, that it would demotivate people and the average score would go down, right? You might not say it.
Demotivate people to do what? Because right now, right, we have healthcare that is publicly funded. We have social services. Right. We have, you know, housing benefit. We have universal credit. We have disability payments. We have all these sorts
should
of things.
Should they tax
and people
the rich
are still, people are still going out and working.
Should rich
it's
people,
not demotivating
should,
anybody.
Should rich people pay more taxes?
Yes, but I believe that it's on a scale. So I believe that the richest in society, which is like billionaires and multi-billionaires, are not paying enough taxes at all.
Every 45 minutes right now in the UK, a millionaire leaves the country because of the taxes.
Okay.
So what happens is when you talk about socialism and trying to make sure that everybody is paid the same, where's that money going to come from? What you're effectively saying is it should come from the rich people. The rich people, the people that have built businesses and worked hard and strived for themselves and for their families, they should be dividing their money with the less fortunate. That's what you're saying. But, you do that, you're going to disincentivize people. What's the point? And what will happen is the standard of living will become far worse because of an idealistic...
Firstly, I think this is an assumption that it's going to disincentivize people.
It's human.
Secondly, you know, it's also... you know, wildly kind of, you know, it's like a real sweeping statement to say that everybody who has earned many millions and hundreds of millions and billions of pounds has worked hard in order to earn that wealth. A lot of the time, you know, billionaires don't become billionaires without exploiting labor, without, you know, look at Amazon, for instance, look at the way that Amazon warehouse workers are treated and what they are paid. I don't know if you've recently read about the conditions in Amazon warehouses and the fact that they have to take timed bathroom breaks and so on. You don't get to a place where you are extremely, extremely rich without at some point exploiting somebody's labor. I'm fairly confident of this. I think that, you know, I would challenge you to, you know, look at any billionaire that has ever existed and then look at their history and their family's history and the wealth that they came into this world with, and then examine if at any point they exploited anybody's labor or actually if all of it is through ethical practices. And I'm, you know, sure that 10 times out of 10, it is going to be because they exploited someone along the way. Either it was because they owned slaves and they have generational wealth, or it's because of, you know, exploiting labor in this day and age. So I do not believe that everybody who gets that rich gets rich because of ethical practices or because they worked hard. That is definitely a myth, right? And I believe that, you know, these people have more than enough. I mean, $1 billion or £1 billion is more than any individual can spend in several lifetimes, even if you are, you know, spending like millions of pounds every day, right? I mean, this is, if you do the maths, really, it's really, that is true. And so the idea is that instead of these people hoarding this wealth, because that is what we're doing, and that is effectively where capitalism has failed, is because the idea was that all wealth would trickle down, and it does not trickle down, it just stays up. Because people hoard it, they hold on to it, and they do not let go. And that is the idea of taxation, is to make sure that these people let go of their wealth, and it actually serves a wider purpose in society. And, you know, these people still have enough to live with. They're absolutely fine. It is not going to affect their standard of living. The only reason that they want to avoid taxes is because of the fact that they are hoarding wealth.
So what's the point in a wealthy person then continuing to want to build their business? Do you think that they should just say, I've made enough money? I think that's actually very selfish. In fact, I think that to say, I've made enough money now for me to be able to live a good life, I'm not going to bother building my business. I'm not going to bother employing more people and growing and taking things to the next level and serving more people. I'm just going to say, nope, I'm going to retire now. I've done all. That's quite selfish. The thing that drives me.
I mean, that's, if you think that's selfish, that's entirely your opinion. I think that anybody who runs a business is entitled to decide how far they make their business grow and at what point they stop and step away. I think that, you know, it's like even people who have kind of, you know, the biggest businesses in the world, like Jack Dorsey, for instance, he went and sold Twitter and he stepped away from it because of the fact that he kind of said, okay, I've done enough. You know, I don't want to do want any more to do with this. I've done what I could. Mm-hmm. And they stepped away. And I think that people, that is their prerogative to be able to kind of decide, you know, not just in business, in anything, right? If they want to step away from something, then that's entirely up to them. So if you feel that that's selfish, then you're entitled to feel that way.
Well, I also think that your assumption that to become very wealthy, you must have exploited people. From my
It's not an assumption.
Well, from my experience...
It's pretty much documented in history.
Well, from my experience, from being wealthy myself, and also from being friends and knowing many wealthy people, I don't think that is true at all. I think that, I mean, some of the kindest, sweetest people I've ever met that give the most money to charity, have the biggest hearts, are very wealthy people. And the reason they've become wealthy is because they've created a product or a service that served many people, and people pay them because they want what they have. They've created something valuable.
Sure, sure. I mean, I think that, you know, it's possible for both things to be true at the same time. So it's possible that none of the people that you know who are wealthy.
I don't doubt that there's people out there who are
unethical. Yeah, so it's possible that the people that you know who are wealthy have kind of, you know, had ethical practices as far as you are aware, right? But it's also, you know, very likely that people who kind of are wealthy, it's very likely that, you know, and this happens quite often in sort of day to day, that we are restricted to kind of our circle, to our bubble, as it were. Yeah. We all live in our bubbles,
yeah,
right?
It's true.
And it's very, I think it's kind of human nature to look at your bubble and think, okay, this is how the world must be.
Yeah.
So I understand that that's your bubble. And, you know, I think that it's entirely possible that the people that you associate with are good people. That's fine. But I do believe that, and, you know, bearing in mind what I'm talking about when I say that, they must have exploited people. I was referring specifically to billionaires, right? I was referring to people who are extremely, extremely wealthy, right? You know, if you know somebody who is kind of that wealthy and has not exploited anybody and their forefathers have not exploited anybody, then that's great. I would love to meet them. You know, I would love to be proven wrong. Yeah. But I'm going off of what I have seen of kind of the billionaires that exist in this day and age.
Well, I'm far from a billionaire.
Yeah.
But my business does about 20 million a year. So I'm, in comparison to, you know, most people, I'm very wealthy. What do you think, final topic, about landlords and property owners? Do you think it's unethical to own multiple properties? Do you think you should only own one? What's your opinion on that? Because that's where most of my wealth comes from.
I think that it really depends on the impact that your property development practices are having on local communities.
Yeah.
So anywhere that you might choose to go and buy a home, there are people already living there. So I think that my fundamental position is that having a home is a right. You know, having shelter is a right. Having a decent quality of life is, I believe, part of the, you know, Human Rights Act in the UK, right? And I believe that that right trumps the right of somebody to own property. So I believe that if owning multiple homes or going in and developing property in an area is going to disadvantage people locally, then I believe that it is not ethical. And I believe that, you know, it's possible for people who own property to, you know, to address that, to do things ethically, to take local community needs into account.
I mean, I'd like to think I do. I make good profit on it, but I do think about the effect it has on the economy and people. And one of the reasons that I enjoy doing debates like this is because you talked about having a bubble. It's great to be able to let other people in that have got different opinions.
Yeah.
So really appreciate the conversation.
Yeah.
And thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you for having me. It was great. Thank you.